Hey there, Mike Stelzner coming to you with a fascinating update you might not be familiar with. Did you know that Social Media Examiner can deliver all the marketing training, news, and trends, insights that you need into your inbox 3 days a week when you sign up for our newsletter, and it's completely free? Simply visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates and take your marketing to the next level.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Podcast, helping you navigate the social media jungle. And now, here is your host, Michael Stelzner.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining me for the Social Media Marketing Podcast, brought to you by socialmediaexaminer.com. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner, and this is the podcast for marketers and business owners who want to know what works with social media. I'm really excited about today's show. I'll be joined by Josh Horton, and we'll explore how he went from being a marketer working at an agency to becoming a nearly full-time Instagram influencer. And I got to tell you, there is a lot of content gold inside of this interview. So if you create content for any platform, you're going to want to listen to this interview. By the way, if you want to get in touch with me, podcast@socialmediaexaminer.com comes right to my inbox. Now for this week's brand new discovery.
Helping you stay alive in the social jungle, here is this week's survival tip.
This week I'm joined by Eric Fisher with a brand new discovery. What'd you find, Eric?
I found a great tool that allows you to install a widget on your website to showcase your Instagram stories.
Interesting. Tell me more.
Yes. So this is made by Fastory, which is spelled F-A-S-T, like fast, and then O-R-Y. So it's kind of putting the words fast and story together. And what they've done is they've got an official API-approved widget by Instagram that allows you to see the current stories from a, you know, whatever account it is that you want to highlight on your website. So we could do this for Social Media Examiner. But not only that, it then allows you to do the new highlights feature, which, you know, if you go to our site, it's instagram.com/smexaminer. And we've got all these little circles on our Instagram profile, which are highlights. In other words, they are Instagram stories that don't go away. We've held them there for you because we have them there as highlights of the type of story content we have produced there. And you can add those as well to this widget.
So, is this like a WordPress plugin, or what is this exactly?
Yeah, what it is you sign up and then you log in. You basically, because it's an official API, what you do is you log in through Facebook and then you get your HTML code and you drop that in on your site.
Okay. I don't even know what HTML code is, but I'm assuming it's some sort of little source code. So does this, what's the use case here? Like, would you stick this in a sidebar, or where would you put this exactly?
Well, the showcase that they've done here is they're showing, like, for example, on the New York Times, you go there and there's a little pop-up that comes up in the lower right of the site. And it's basically like a phone type screen sitting there, and it shows you, you know, Instagram stories. It allows you to click a button to follow that Instagram account right there from the site. It shows you the content, the new story content, as well as some of the highlight little bubbles that you can click on and select those highlights to watch. So honestly, if you're all in on Instagram, especially Instagram stories, this might be something to consider.
It's kind of fascinating, actually.
Yeah.
The pricing?
This is free.
Really?
Yeah, this is free. Fastory has some other products, so I'm assuming giving this widget away for free is a play for that as well.
And I'm on their website. It looks like if you want it white labeled, meaning I guess you don't want their brand on there, it looks like you probably could get it, you know, at a cost. So very, very fascinating. Have you seen this in action on any websites yet?
I have personally not found any that are doing it, other than, again, their example is the New York Times. So I assume you could go there and see it. But yeah, it's very interesting. I know that there are some speakers who actually were talking this up at Social Media Marketing World, and they were using it.
Very, very, very interesting. Faststory.io is the site that I'm at. Is that where you would send people?
Yes. Actually, I would go to widget.fastory.io.
Got it. Widget.fastory.io. Thank you so much, Eric.
You're welcome.
Did you know that we can deliver awesome marketing info directly into your inbox? Simply subscribe to our weekly newsletter that comes out 3 days a week. You won't miss any of the updates going on in the world of social marketing. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/get updates.
And now for today's interview with Josh Horton.
Helping you to simplify your social safari. Here is this week's expert guide.
Today, I'm excited to be joined by Josh Horton, known online as Juggling Josh. He is a marketer turned influencer with more than 1 million followers across all the social channels. And he also holds 12 Guinness World Records, and he's been on The Ellen Show. Josh, welcome to my show.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me.
So today we're going to explore how Josh went from his corporate job as a marketer to a full-time online influencer, and we're going to talk about some of the strategies that he used along the way. So Josh, I would love to explore your story. So where did you start? Maybe start with the marketer, you know, and working in corporate America, and how did you get here where you are right now?
Yeah, for sure. So when I graduated college, my plan was to be a professional juggler as a performer. And I was doing that for several months. And then a friend of a friend, kind of like a family friend, was starting this social media agency. And it just had a few people. I was the eighth person they brought on. And I started out the very low end of this totem pole, literally like deleting spam and cuss words off of Facebook pages.
And what year is that? Just so people have context.
Yeah, this is in, I think, 2012.
So okay, cool.
I graduated 2011, and it was a few months after that. And so I was working for this company part-time. I was doing like 15 to 20 hours a week, depending on how much they needed me. And then the company just started to blow up. And this is a company called McBeard Media, which was then brought into Full Screen Media, which is a much bigger company now. And so as it was growing, they kind of brought me on and was like, hey, like, do you want a full-time job? And I was still performing on the side, but there was no office. It was all working remotely. So I started doing both, juggling and traveling for shows and working this full-time job. And, you know, fast forward a couple years, and I was like a manager at this company and managing a team of coordinators and graphic designers and video editors, and we were running some awesome brand campaigns. But kind of the more deeper I fell into this job, the less and less I was focusing on juggling.
So what kind of stuff were you guys doing when you were back at that agency or that company? Like, what kind of work were you doing, just so people can have some context?
Yeah, so we were running the kind of the day-to-day of multiple brand pages. And so the specific brand that I was with for a long time was Sony Pictures.
Oh, cool.
So every movie that Sony Pictures were putting out, every movie had their own Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, sometimes Snapchat. And so I think I was on the Sony team for about 2 years. And then my last year, I kind of moved into a different role where I was overseeing a lot of the different brands. But we were, you know, doing the day-to-day. So we were writing captions for approval to the client. We were creating the graphics and the videos that were getting posted every day to these brand pages.
So at what point did you get the itch that you might want to go off on your own? Tell us more.
Sure. So I kind of call it my quarter life crisis. It was when I was turning 25 years old. I was like, holy cow. Like, there was just a point where I looked and I had no gigs booked for the future. Like, literally no dollars of income for juggling. And juggling was the thing that, you know, I loved the most. And
but it was a side hustle, right? Wasn't it?
It was. I mean, side hustle, but it was also my, you know, where I was more passionate and, you know, felt
like what you wanted to do.
More called to what I want to do. And kind of when I just had nothing going for it, I just took the leap. And it was, my birthday was at the end of May. And then kind of in June and beginning of July is when I finally quit my job. And I quit my job still with no foreseeable income for the juggling, which was...
And what year was this?
This was summer of 2015.
Perfect. So what did you do once you went off on your own?
I started hustling. And the plan then was to be a performer. So to do what I originally planned on and being I do a lot of halftime shows. I perform at corporate events, you know, community things, and that sort of route was what I was planning on doing, is being a performer, so on stage. But I knew all this stuff about social media, so I was like, hey, like, I might as well start to try to grow an Instagram following. That was a platform that I enjoyed the most, and I also kind of figured it was the easiest one to grow a following. And I'm still performing, and I've performed a lot over the last couple of years. But since then, my social media following has grown to a point where it is now making me more money than I am as a performer.
Awesome. So what I'd love to do through the rest of this interview is kind of talk a little bit about what you did on Instagram, because it sounds like that was really instrumental in the beginning stages, and maybe what you've learned along the way so others can also learn from you. And then we can start talking about a little bit about what you're doing today, which is more focused on YouTube and how that whole influencer thing has grown. Does that sound like a good plan?
Perfect.
Okay, so let's talk about Instagram. Like, what were you doing in the early days? And just so people understand, like, how big did you grow your Instagram account? Let's set that context out of the gate here.
Sure. So I think when I quit my job, I was at about, like, I was still posting some pretty cool stuff, but it was, you know, about 3 years ago now. So 2.5 years ago when I quit my job, I think I was at like 8,000 followers, and now I'm at 260 something thousand.
Perfect. So tell us about what you did with Instagram.
So I think what was good for me in the beginning was right when I was focusing on it was pretty soon after video had launched on Instagram. And I think working at that company and learning the brand end of social media, and, you know, something that we would always talk about at the company was like, how can you make something that's so good that people want to like, comment, or share on it? Right. And so I think that's the biggest issue that people have with their branded content is that they're posting just to post and they don't really think about, you know, why it's not performing well, or they complain that the algorithm is killing their post when they've just been posting stuff that people don't want to see. And so I kind of took that to my own platform. And so with Instagram videos and juggling, I wasn't just putting out, you know, an unedited thing of someone holding the camera and me posting a juggling video. Like, I was editing it to music, and I would have like transitions and a fade in and a fade out. And it was really like a piece of content as opposed to just like, you know, something that was sloppily put together. And so that like started to gain me some followers organically. And then I also like found a lot of these like viral video accounts on Instagram that, you know, that are just like millions of followers that all they do is post other people's content all the time. And so that's how I gained a lot of followers for a while, was those pages reposting my videos, my trick shots.
Was that with or without permission, just out of curiosity?
Some of both.
Interesting.
You know, as long as they tagged me, I was okay with it.
It's funny because I've had Zach King on my show, excuse me, multiple times. And he told me, you know, when he got started with Vine, it wasn't until someone had, quote unquote, stole his vines and sewed them all together into like a compilation video and put them up on Facebook and YouTube that all of a sudden all this interest, you know, happened. And because obviously it was about him and these are about you, you kind of have a similar story. Right. And that's kind of fascinating. So you found that these other accounts started resharing your stuff, and then all of a sudden everybody was like, who is this Josh Horton guy? Is that kind of what started happening?
Yeah, it's, you know, slowly started to build and reaching out to those other pages, and I started collabing with other influencers. You know, I was the best part about, you know, I think while I was still like a reason why I will still keep performing and traveling is because traveling is a really easy way for me to justify flying somewhere for a collab. So like now whenever I have a halftime show, I'm seeing what other influencers are in that area, making videos with them, whether it's on Instagram or YouTube, to help grow my followings there. And so was something.
Just real quick, when you say halftime show, what do you mean by that?
Oh, I perform at a lot of NBA and college halftime shows. So juggling.
Tell people what makes you unique, because they're listening and they may not have seen your stuff. Like, explain kind of some of the juggling stuff you do that might not be typical.
Sure. So, as you said, like, I've 12 Guinness World Records. Most of those are for juggling. I've got 9 gold medals in the World Championships for juggling. But this is a, you know, totally separate non-social media marketing thing that I kind of decided with my juggling is I really wanted to focus on the halftime shows. And so I have my normal juggling website, but I also have like a halftime show specific website. It's like basketballjuggler.com. And I juggle basketballs. I wear a jersey and shorts and pull off my pants while juggling, like the, you know, like the breakaway basketball pants. And so I really created like the ultimate halftime show. And so that's how I made a living for a couple of years there, was just doing these NBA and college halftime shows.
Got it. So back to your Instagram account. So I know that you've learned some stuff that we talked about before we got on this call together that are kind of some tips beyond just creating a video that has some music and is nicely produced, things like strategies around thumbnail and stuff like that. Can you kind of share some of the things that you learned along the way for others who are trying to grow their Instagram account?
Sure. So it's obviously always changing, and a big change was when they brought out the Explore feature. And so now your thumbnails are more important than ever. You know, it used to be you'd get most of your views and your and likes, whatever, just from your followers. So the thumbnail wasn't that important because it was autoplaying and, you know, your followers were seeing it. But now a huge percent of my views are coming from, like, fewer percent of my views are coming from my followers, and then a big percent is coming from Explore. So that means that you want that all they're seeing when they're going through those, you know, grids and grids and grids of videos and pictures on Explore, you want something that you want people to click on. So just like YouTube strategy, just like Facebook, anything else, you want that thumbnail to be something that people want to click on.
I don't actually manage our Instagram account, so I'm not super active on Instagram. Do they provide insights into you to tell you kind of where people discovered you and where they're watching and where they ultimately became followers?
They do. They recently rolled out some new analytics, which were really nice. So it tells you, like, what percent of your views are from Explore and what percent are from your home. And that rolled out pretty recently.
So talk about your thumbnail strategy, like, a little bit. Like, what tips would you give to people on creating thumbnails that are going to get people to click on them?
Sure. So, the biggest thing is to choose one. I think the biggest thing that I'll go through a lot of brand accounts, and a video will start with a fade, which is black. And then you go to their page and you just see a lot of black squares. And, like, I see it all the time. And I'm just like, oh, you're not doing yourself any favors. It looks bad in your profile. No one's going to click on it and on Explore. And so the biggest thing is just remember to do it. And if you post and then you have to, you know, a few minutes later, you're like, oh, shoot, I forgot to do it. Don't just ignore it. Delete. It's worth deleting and reposting because it's going to be on your profile for forever. And you don't want those black squares. And you can't change it after you post it. So the biggest thing is just remember to do it. And then after that, it's just about, like, you know, finding the best frame. And now sometimes when I'm making an Instagram video, I'm even thinking about the thumbnail, before, you know, as we're shooting, I want to make sure that there's something that people want to click on. And then there's ways to, you know, you can't upload a thumbnail like you can on YouTube. But if there's a time where I think there's not a very good thumbnail, you can, like, have your video fade to black. And then a few seconds later, add in one frame to your video.
Oh, that's a really good strategy.
Then you choose that frame. And so I'll mess with that every once in a while. And I know we talked about this earlier. We can get into that more. I think that, you know, having text and stuff on within your Instagram video or on photos isn't the best practice. But I think the one exception is creating meme text, specifically for your thumbnail. And meme text is, you know, I mean, the white bars and the black text to look, you know, like those viral Facebook videos or whatever. And people have just been trained when they see that means it's something funny or something amazing. And so sometimes I won't have the meme bars be there for the entire video, but I will make that the thumbnail.
Just so people don't, just in case they don't understand what you're talking about, is that where you kind of take like a 16:9 frame and then put black bars above and below and then put text over the black? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, well, white bars, black text usually.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Right. So
any tips on, like, what kind of text you put in there for your videos, just out of curiosity? Like, is there certain kinds of things that seem to get people to play?
You know, it depends on what you're posting, obviously. I did one recently that was just like, wait for it in big text. And so, you know, they make sure they'll watch through.
Oh, that's very smart.
yeah. Rich, I think, you know, I don't have any official data on this, but I think retention, you know, is a big thing for videos on Instagram. So I think if you give them a reason to watch to the end, that's going to be good. I recently had a video on Instagram do 3 million views, and it was like this little kid who could stack dice, which is like a unique skill. Huh. And the meme text was just 5-year-old Dax dice stacking genius. And so I guess, you know, it's just something that grabs your attention. Like, what the heck is dice stacking? What the heck is a, like, 5-year-old doing it? So anything, I think that it can be.
Now, that's awesome. And by the way, I want to circle back. You said don't put text on photos. So sure. Does that mean for everybody out there who's creating these quote graphics and stuff that they're not necessarily going to perform as well? Or does it just depend on what your channel objective is?
I think it definitely depends on your channel, and if your thing, if your brand is quote graphics and inspirational things that I think that can work. But I think, you know, something I did when I was working at McBeard was did a pretty big audit of the most successful brands on Instagram. And I think I looked at the top 20 most followed and engaged accounts. And it was like of those 20, 19 of them hadn't used any graphic text in the last like 3 weeks or whatever I looked at. So no logos on their photos, no nothing. It was just, you know, organic, awesome photos, awesome videos.
Oh, really interesting part about the logo. So you don't even recommend like a branding or watermarking with your brand. You just recommend a photo in general. Is that what I hear you saying on both your videos as well?
Sure. I mean, these are brands like Adidas and Chanel, or you know, all those things that obviously had their branding in the photo. But there's no point if it's a Nike photo.
Oh yeah. That makes sense.
There's no point of putting a Nike watermark when there's already a Nike shoe in it, I think.
Very good. Any tips on how to get our videos into the to be discovered by Instagram so they can be found in that area where you get featured?
Yeah, explore.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of, people talk about the Facebook algorithm, how it shows your post to a few of your followers, and then depending on the engagement there, it will boost it to explore. And based on how many people click on it with explore, it'll show it to more people on explore, right? And so I think a big thing there is your engagement within the first few minutes of posting. And so whenever I post, first of all, I know we're going to talk about Instagram stories here in a little bit, but one thing I often do is use Instagram stories to prime my followers for a post. And so either I'll give them like a warning, or I'll say, I just posted. So I'll say, hey, like, I'm posting in 10 minutes. Who's going to get the first comment? Or, I'll do some sort of giveaway if they like and comment within the first few minutes of posting. And I think Instagram stories is a really good way to generate those.
Oh, so you're using Instagram stories to get them to comment on your normal Instagram posts is what I'm hearing you say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you go live to do that? Or are you just...
I don't go live. Stories. Normal posts. And sometimes I'll even delete the story after the first few minutes because it's served its purpose of
fascinating.
Getting people to see in the first few posts. Huh.
Why are you doing that? Because you feel like that engagement metric is going to be really important to somehow signal Instagram that this thing is hot? Is that kind
of... Actually, I have heard from someone at Instagram like tell me that if you get likes and comments from, especially from like other fans, but also other big pages within the first few minutes of posting, it's going to help your post perform better in the long run.
Well, I remember Gary Vaynerchuk doing this like a year ago where he had, his firsters or whatever he called it, right? Where they would all post like crazy. But
yeah, he's still doing it. First in line, I think, is his new thing. It used to be a 60-second club.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Fascinating. So is there any other techniques that you think are important? Is there a time-based thing where the stuff that Instagram features has to be within 24 hours, or can it sometimes go on for days or weeks? I'm curious.
Like how long it lives on Explore?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it can stay there for a really long time.
Really?
Like that post that I told you had 3 million, like it got like another million a couple like weeks after it had been in there. So like that's kind of the only way to extend the life of an Instagram post is if you get on the Explore section, because usually your followers are done seeing it within 48 hours, I think.
Is there any kind of keywords or anything that are somehow related to the way you write up the description that are also showing up in the Explore area? Like, I don't know, I'm just thinking out loud here. Like if there are certain keywords in there and they know people are interested in juggling, then they're going to show the juggling stuff to the people that are interested in juggling.
I would love to know more on that. I think hashtags can definitely play a part, but I know like when you're going through Explore, there are like video playlists. Like I'm scrolling through right now and I see one that's called like yo-yos, and I'm sure they're showing it to me because, in the world of Instagram videos, yo-yos is somewhat similar to juggling.
Right.
And so there's a whole playlist of yo-yo videos, and not all of them use hashtag yo-yo in the description. So I would love to know how they...
Got it.
How they identify those things. But I think there's, maybe keywords, maybe it's hashtags, maybe it's just who's following who. There's a lot that is beyond me.
Fascinating. So over to Instagram stories, beyond you using stories to kind of incentivize your followers to comment, is there anything else you're doing with stories?
Sure. So I when I think of stories, like I think a lot about the old Gary V stuff of like jab, jab, right hook. And so it is such a good way to get people to, do something, you know, leave their stories to go do whatever you want, especially with the swipe up feature and all of that. So I'm bad about it. And I try to do more of like just making Instagram stories something that is easily digestible behind the scenes. Sometimes I'll even post like old videos that are they're just there just to be good Instagram story content to keep people engaged, so that when I do ask them, hey, go like my post, or hey, swipe up for a new YouTube video, they don't feel like that's the only thing I post on stories. So I would say the biggest thing is kind of like the behind the scenes of my life.
Do you, like, when you're about to go out in an NBA game, do you ever just do a little quick story? Hey, I'm here at the Lakers game or whatever, and super excited about to go out. Here's the audience, you know, that kind of stuff.
Totally. That's exactly it. Yep.
Cool. Are you using the highlights feature much at all to bring some of those stories into some sort of a permanent kind of thing, or have you not messed around with that?
I'm waiting for the right idea. I want to do something unique, and I wish there was kind of an easier way to organize it. Like right now, some people have used like the, you know, they post something on their story that's basically like a logo for whatever category, and I think it looks super nice, and I just haven't wrapped my head around how to use it yet. But I think it's an awesome feature, and I've loved some people that have been taking good advantage of it.
Okay, so at what point on your Instagram journey did you start to realize that this was a way that you can make money? Talk to us a little bit about how you did that.
Sure. Well, one thing I forgot to mention, which how I got a huge boost in followers, was I was featured by at Instagram. So Instagram, like their Instagram account. So that was something,
work? How does that work? Every once in a while, they'll just randomly feature certain people on Instagram?
Basically, they do a lot. You know, they're more of like an artistic type of channel. But every once in a while, they do, you know, they want to appeal to everyone, so they'll do the occasional sports video and whatnot. But it was World Juggling Day. You know, it's one of those kind of like fake holidays.
Right.
And I did have a contact at Instagram, and I just kind of pitched them the idea. I was like, hey, like I think it'd be cool to feature a juggler for World Juggling Day, and I can be that guy. And so I got more followers than I've ever gotten in a day on.
Okay, this begs an interesting question. Have you ever used a publicist, or has this always been you just kind of hustling and promoting yourself?
Oh, it's always just me.
Fascinating. Yeah. And do you think the Instagram account has actually helped you get more real world juggling gigs?
A little bit. I talk about that a lot because I have a lot of circus juggler friends who are always asking for business advice on how to use social media to book more gigs. And I would say I've booked very few from my social media, but some of the other, like, you know, being on some of these TV shows and stuff have been more from social media, but less, you know, I'm not booking like a lot of halftime shows or corporate events because they see an Instagram video.
Got it. Okay. So back to the, somewhere along the line, you started figuring out how to make money with your Instagram following. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I think my first one was for like $150, and I was at, I don't remember how many thousands of followers. And it just kind of fell in my lap. I think someone reached out to me and was like, hey, it was for Chevrolet was doing some sort of like soccer campaign. And I don't know how they found my account, and I was pretty small, and they just, you know, hey, you take a picture with some soccer, juggling some soccer balls, and use this hashtag, and we'll pay you this money. And I was like, ah.
Did you have to have a cool car in the background that was one of their cars or something like that?
No car, just me juggling soccer balls. So that was the first one, and
But there must have been some text or something that mentioned.
Yeah. It was, you know, using the hashtag and talking about their whatever their. I don't even remember. I need to go look. I would need to go look at
the post. Something to do with their cars.
They were doing a soccer campaign. Yeah.
Cool.
That was the first one, and I was like, hey, that was pretty easy and fun. And there's been a ton of brands since then.
So kind of talk to us a little bit about like how that works, because there's probably a lot of people right now who have not done this and don't know exactly, you know, how all this works and stuff like this. And has this become a pretty significant source of income for you?
Yeah, for sure. So the biggest thing is, you know, how do they come in? And I would love to know how some of these people find me, because it's a lot of agencies representing brands. You know, it's rarely someone immediately from the brand, reaching out to me. That's happened a few times, but, it's a lot of these like digital marketing agencies, and someone reaches out and they tell me about the campaign they're running, ask if I want to be a part. And then we kind of figure out the details of how many posts on what platforms for how much money. Depending on the client, you know, there's different levels of flexibility and, creative freedom on my end. But then end up, with the post, and usually everyone's happy.
So is it like you juggling like toothbrushes and stuff? I mean, are we talking about like taking your juggling craft and like taking their product and somehow integrating it together? Is that generally how they're working with you?
Something like that. You know, it's not always so like just juggle our product, you know, usually it tries to be a little bit more natural than that.
Right.
But sometimes it's not. So like I'm doing a post next week for this new sparkling water called Bubbly. Ellen DeGeneres and Neil Patrick Harris are promoting it. And so, yeah, I'm balancing six cans on my head while their whole campaign is super bright neon colors. And so I'm balancing, I think, four cans on my head while juggling four juggling clubs, and the clubs match the colors of the cans. And it's just like a cool looking photo. Other times we did a campaign for Carnival Cruises, where they sent me and my YouTube partner, Jake, who we'll talk about later, but they sent us on a cruise, and the prompt was post this many times proving to your followers that you're having a good time on a cruise. And
it was awesome. That was it.
And like, wow. There was no other guidelines, tag Carnival and just show that you're having a good time.
And they paid you and you got to go on a free cruise?
Oh yeah.
That's awesome.
And then like a recent one, this was like a couple weeks ago, was for Reebok, and Reebok was doing like a specific contest called the Fastest Feet Challenge, where everyone was, they hired several influencers to basically jump over a line really quickly, like an exercise, and challenge their fans to beat my score. And if they submit, if they submit their video that we using a hashtag, then they could win a trip to Dallas for a big sports event. And so that was one where, it was a very specific prompt, and I had to find a way to make it a little bit more natural to my followers. So of course I did it while juggling. But I would say that's kind of the more typical one, is like encouraging. There's a lot of campaigns where it's encouraging fans to participate in something. Doing one on Friday for Jack in the Box and the LA Lakers, of, they're doing like use this hashtag with a picture of you wearing your sunglasses while watching a Lakers game for the Sunglasses at Night campaign, and you could win, this or that. So
do you find that there's advantage to you beyond monetary advantage when you're working with some of these big brands, because maybe they end up promoting Josh Horton, on some of their other channels, and all of a sudden it kind of is a win-win that goes beyond just you promoting them to your audience? Or is it mostly just,
sure,
yeah, talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's definitely like sometimes where, big accounts like Reebok are retweeting my tweet, or I had a McDonald's one. I did work for McDonald's a couple months ago. And so, some of their accounts are huge. And so getting posted by them is always good.
Because you end up getting more fans and followers as a result of that, right?
Sure.
So has this gotten to the point where it's now, the amount of income that you're making is now challenging you to decide whether you want to keep doing these performances or not?
Yeah, it really is. I think there's some clashing business advice, that I went to school for business and have a lot of business savvy friends. And, one thing would be, you want several sources of revenue.
Right.
And I can almost guarantee a certain amount of money from halftime shows, because I'm well in that market and I know how to book those shows. But they take a lot of time and they're making me less money than the other stuff. But you can't guarantee that Reebok is just going to call with a brand deal that day. So it's something I'm struggling with. But one exciting thing is that my wife is going to be joining me soon to help run the logistics of things. So hopefully she will be able to also, be reaching out. And that's how some of these brand deals are coming, is me reaching out to brands that I like. And, whether that's on email or LinkedIn or DMs on Twitter, even have turned into brand deals. And so having her handle some things will also help.
Let's talk about YouTube, because I know it's your big focus right now. So why don't you describe what you and your partner are doing on your YouTube channel and kind of what your plans are with that?
Sure. YouTube, I think, is so tough. Like it's a platform where I think you have the greatest potential for earnings. And that's not why I didn't do any of social media stuff to make a living. It kind of fell on my lap, but then, I'm obviously here and trying to figure it all out. But YouTube is definitely the place where you can earn the most, and for both from brand deals, but also from the ad revenue.
Right.
And so I was kind of scared of it, especially while I was doing all the halftime shows and by myself, it was just like to do it right, you need to be posting a lot. You need to be posting longer videos. You need to be doing so much. And while, when it was just me, it was like almost too much to handle. And I had something just kind of like fall perfectly in place. Like it was a friend of a friend was, his name was Jake, and he was leaving a job that he'd been at for a while. And I just like found his, or he like, we connected on Facebook, and he'd just been making just like these really funny, really well edited videos for his, like basically just for his friends. Like he wasn't trying to be a social media star, wasn't trying to get famous or anything, but was really good with the camera, really good at editing, and really funny on camera. And I just kind of told him, hey, like, I can't promise you any money right now, but if you want to come move to Dallas and try to do YouTube with me, like, I think we can make something happen. And he took the risk. And so Jake joined me last July. And when he joined, we were about at, or I was at like 20,000 subscribers. And now we're at almost 114,000 we'll hit today.
What's the name of the channel?
Our channel is called Jake and Josh. So it was Juggling Josh, but then a little bit after he joined, it is now Jake and Josh.
So tell me kind of what you're doing on that channel and how that's different than what you're doing over on Instagram.
Sure. So I wanted YouTube to be a way to, you know, for me, even before Jake joined, a way for me to become more than just a juggler and to add personality, you know, add a personality to the skills that most people have seen. So like on Instagram, it's kind of hard, besides with stories, it's hard in a few seconds to post something that people want to like, comment, share on. For me, you know, like on trick shots, like they would love my trick shots or juggling or whatever, but they wouldn't really know the man behind it or the personality behind it.
Right.
And so YouTube, because it's long form, is such a good way to do that. And so, and I also wanted to just be known for more than just juggling, and that's kind of where the world record thing came in. And so I started before Jake came every single Wednesday, breaking a world record. So breaking or setting a world record. And a lot of them aren't official or, you know, or anything, but just to do that. And it's a way for me to show that I'm skilled, but also skilled in more things besides just juggling.
So wait a minute. So every Wednesday you publish a video where you're either challenge, you're exceeding some sort of world record, or you're making something that has never been done before. That's kind of a world record. Like, give us an example.
So we have the Guinness World Record for most marshmallows caught in your mouth in a minute. And that's one of our official ones.
Were they mini ones just out of curiosity?
No, this is a Guinness one. So they had to be the big ones.
Oh, really? Okay.
But you're catching and spitting. So it's not like you're keeping all of them in your mouth.
Got it. Okay.
Cause I think it was like 42 in a minute, which is pretty impressive. I dare anyone out there listening to beat that.
Now, okay. So let's pause on the marshmallow thing for a second. So sure. How do you make that, since it's only a minute, how do you make that into a video that's kind of more of a story? Talk to us a little bit about how you guys did that.
I kind of randomly picked that one, but this is a perfect example. We actually were asked to be on the Today Show to break a world record. And we were like, oh yeah, we could do that one. And we failed on national television. So that was a bummer. So we vlogged the whole trip to New York for the shoot. Then we showed the footage of us failing. And then we were like, all right, we didn't do it on TV, but we need to do this. And so then we showed us in the gym breaking it. And then we ended up sending in our video of proof and got the official Guinness World Record.
So all that was essentially compiled into one video?
Is that yeah.
So are you also showing the frustration after you guys got off the show that you weren't able to break the record, or are you just, okay, cool. So it's kind of like a little journey with you guys of how you're like trying to do these things. People love it when you don't do it successfully. I don't know what it is, but you look more human, right? When you actually don't succeed.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that was something we kind of learned. Like when we first started, all of our YouTube videos were probably 3 to 4, maybe 5 minutes. We really started seeing growth and better engagement and more like longer retention and everything when we started posting longer videos. So it was like we could just show the complete world record, but now we definitely show the journey, the path, the struggles, the fails, all of that, and people love that so much more.
I'll tell you about one I saw recently where you were throwing an axe at a tree. And you had paint cans attached to the tree, and you and you had like either purchased or leased this super expensive slow motion camera, right?
Yep.
And in one of the scenes, all the paint splattered all over the camera.
Yeah, that's nice.
I was like, "What?" You know, and I just thought that was so cool.
That was fun. That was our friends, Legendary Shots, or other influencers. So they own a Phantom slow mo camera, which is like over $60,000.
How in the world did, just out of curiosity, how long did it take you guys to clean that sucker off?
It didn't take too long. Okay. You can take it apart, and yeah, it was all everything was fun. But yeah, that was fun, and that was one of our videos. We moved from doing once a week. Once Jake joined, now we post every Monday, every Wednesday, every Saturday. So Monday and Saturday, there's kind of other videos that are usually involve some sort of skill, not necessarily. But
how long does it take you to produce one of those episodes?
Usually about maybe 4 hours of editing, and then it really depends on the type of video for the.
So you guys have it down to a rocket science. Grant Thompson's a friend of mine who does the King of Random, and it used to take him like over 100 hours to produce every episode of his show.
Oh my gosh,
which was nuts, and he was trying to do it like Mythbusters kind of quality, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Super high end stuff, and it wasn't until he really got it down to a system that was manageable that he could get to the point where he could publish every day, and that's when his channel just exploded. And the lower quality stuff turned out to actually be more fascinating to viewers than the super produced stuff. Are you finding that to be true as well?
Definitely true. And I tell people this, like, Jake is an awesome cinematographer, like can do make awesome works of art, but nothing that you see on our YouTube channel is like that, because it's more run and gun, just get it done and upload. Like, we don't even color grade anything. Like, it is just pretty raw, thrown together.
Why is it? Because that seems so counter to what the Instagram experience is, right? Why is it that way over there on YouTube? What's your thoughts on that?
I think people just like feeling like they're in the room with you. We uploaded a video yesterday. We had 100,000 subscriber party. So we invited subscribers and fans and, you know, friends and family to a place where we had some games and fed them dinner and whatever. So we just kind of showed some of the footage from that. And then the rest of the video was just like us on the couch talking about the party. And Jake and I on the video were like, hey, like, this is kind of a boring video, but whatever. But we got several comments that said, hey, no, like, I like videos like this. I feel like it's just a chill session. Like, we're just in the room with you guys. And so I think that's what it is. Like, people want to feel like they're your friends, like they're right there with you, not watching a movie or a TV show.
Do you feel like the people over on YouTube are a different demographic than the ones you've got over on Instagram?
I think age, all that stuff could be similar, but I think they're definitely different people. Like, I was very surprised when I started taking my YouTube seriously. I was very surprised and discouraged of how few of my Instagram followers I could get to transfer over to YouTube. And I think it's a few things. I think people, you know, there's like those YouTube people out there, like they love YouTube. Like, when they have free time, they're on YouTube, they're watching YouTube videos, they love their favorite YouTubers. And then there are people that are the opposite and they're on Instagram. And so, you know, your diehard fans, you can get to switch over, but I think people definitely have their platform of preference, and unless they're like the mega fans, and you're not going to be able to get them to necessarily switch over for you.
The last question I want to ask is for anybody who's listening right now who has a desire to be a paid influencer on whatever video platform they choose, what kind of tips or advice do you have for them?
The biggest one that comes to mind right away would be, you know, have a page that's brand friendly. You know, that seems like such a simple thing, but I've got some friends that are, you know,
What does that mean?
Sure. So they're asking me like, hey, like, I don't understand why I'm not getting stuff. And then they're cussing in their videos, or even if they're not, you know, talking in their videos, they're using, you know, vulgar music in their videos or whatever. Right. So it's like, you want stuff that brands want to partner with. And obviously there are some brands that are okay with that stuff, but most are not. And so that's probably the biggest, you know, or, you know, they're comedy creators, but they use a lot of innuendo or drugs or alcohol or whatever to promote, you know, to be funny or in their skits or whatever. So the biggest thing for me, I think, is just to be as brand friendly as possible.
You almost need to think of yourself like an athlete, right? Because the brands don't want to be around the athletes that are troublemakers, right? Because they don't want their brand affiliated with that in any way, right? But those are who have a certain like excitement and energy and vibe about them, but seem to not be getting into controversial areas, are probably more appealing to brands. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, Josh, first of all, this has been a fascinating conversation. I would love you to tell people where they can find you on Instagram, where they can find you on YouTube, and any other place you would love to send them.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you type in Juggling Josh to anything, including YouTube, it'll pop up. Our YouTube channel is Jake and Josh, Juggling Josh on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, everything else.
And if any brands want to reach out to you that are listening, is there any particular place you want to send them?
You can always message me on any of those platforms, but also, my website is joshhorton.net, and there's contact info there.
Awesome. Josh Horton, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom and experience with us.
Thanks, Michael.
Well, I hope you got a lot of value out of today's interview. If there's anything that we mentioned and you missed it, socialmediaexaminer.com/300. Woo-hoo! Can you believe it? We hit the 300th episode. That's crazy. Hey, listen, I want to just say a couple things. I appreciate you for listening and being part of this journey with me, especially if you've been here for a long time or even all the way since the beginning. If you've never gotten around to doing it, I'd love a rating and or a review. I'd love to find out what you think about it. And if you're new to this show, don't forget to subscribe. We've got some amazing content coming. This brings us to the end of another episode of the Social Media Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner. I'll be back with you next week. I hope you make the absolute best out of your day, and may social media continue to change your world.
The Social Media Marketing Podcast is a production of Social Media Examiner.
Want more good stuff? Sign up for our top-notch social marketing newsletter. We deliver it straight into your inbox 3 days a week. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates.